I'm Vanessa, so I'm an addict.
Hey, Vanessa.
My clean date's 1/23/13, and yeah, woo. And when I was thinking about this topic, I was thinking about how to introduce it, right? Because this isn't a topic I've heard before anywhere, really. I mean, I've read it in the book, and that's about it. And I was reminded of a poem they made me write for school. Not grade school, but college, right? And it was like, tell us where you came from, right? So I'm going to read that poem real quick. It's pretty short. It says, you may see something that helps you relate to me. My life is diverse and sheltered too, I believe. What I've done and where I've been divorced twice, so I don't quite trust men. I've lived in wealth and I've lived in poverty. As far as I can tell, they're all the same to me. I was adopted, given away at first. I don't know if that's a gift or if that's a curse. I've done the same in my turn. I guess it's a full circle moment, a lesson learned. I was raised a Christian, Baptist, a tradition. Things passed down from grandma and papa, things I could copy. Christmas celebrations and dinners together, time building ties that no one can sever. When I think about my childhood, I'm reminded of health, wealth, and happiness. But mom was at school, and I wish dad worked less. I'm from 5 bedrooms and 2 acres in the heart of Houston, from a private school, a Mariner Foal. I'm a little bit country, a little bit symphony, some blues, and some rock and roll. I was raised with manners, a certain pedigree. I've lived in a dope house with no electricity. There was a yacht that had my name, and 4 long years full of guilt and shame. Always these constants to me did remain. Everything changes, and my name. So I'm Vanessa S., and I'm an addict. I love rose-colored glasses. I'm just going to be honest. I like to look at things in a positive light. I like things to be good and happy and okay all the time. But that's not reality. Growing up, I had a lot of good things in my life, right? I had everything I could need and a lot of things I could want. Like I said, I grew up with horses. I had my own pony, right? What does a little girl want? A pony. I got my own pony. I had a trampoline. I had a basketball court in my yard. Like, we had a lot of stuff. But when I was born, my mom was in school. She was gone during the week. She was only home on the weekends. I had a nanny that took care of me. And my dad ran his own business. He was always busy. And the things that I've learned since I've been in recovery, I just finished my master's in social work. So is that I didn't form the attachments I should have when I was little because the people who were supposed to be the closest to me weren't always there. And I didn't know that because I was happy as a kid and I knew I was loved and I felt okay, like everything was okay. And the first thing that ever gave me any indication that things weren't always okay is when my parents sat me down when I was 7 years old and said, we're getting a divorce. They never fought in front of us. They didn't do any of those things that like could be considered detrimental or harmful to us, but they explained it very well and all that, but it still ruined my life. Like it still felt like it was ruining my life, right? I went to a private school. I had a good, you know, education. I had friends. I had, you know, all I could think of was like, everything's great. Everyone's happy all the time. This is how life is. I didn't know any better. And so when things started to go south in my life, I had no idea how to handle it because I thought everything was supposed to be good all the time and everybody was supposed to be happy all the time. And even my dad would always say, like, why can't people just be nice to each other? You know, but that's not how life always is. Some people are not nice, you know, and all of us are not nice all the time, right? Even me. So I was adopted by my mom and dad. So I had some abandonment issues, of course, from that. My sister was sick with cancer from when I was like 2 till when I was about 4 or 5. My mom spent a lot of time with her and not with me. And I didn't know that was going on. Like, I didn't really pay attention to any of that until I was a grown-ass woman, right? I thought everything was good and everything was fine. And when I stopped being able to go to that private school and I went to a public school for the first time and I wasn't as sheltered as I had been before, I had no fucking clue what the hell was going on. Like, I'll just be honest, I had like 1 African-American and 1 person from India in my grade school in elementary. That's it. So I really was like shock and awe when I hit public school. My dad had severe major depression. He was in bed a lot. My mom and dad both overate, overspent, tons of debt. But this is things that I didn't see because I had rose-colored glasses on all the time. All the time. And so I thought I had to be perfect all the time. I thought I had to be happy, Vanessa. Let's go get it done. What can I do for you? Don't rock the boat, Vanessa, all the time. And, you know, it's funny, my birthday is people-pleasing. And I would say that the biggest thing that comes from rose-colored glasses is people-pleasing. Hands down for me, that is the case. What can I do to make things okay? Like, oh, you're not okay? This is not okay? We're not doing okay? How can I fix it? Like, how can I make everything in the whole world better? Right? And for a long time, I felt that responsibility. Like, if anything was bad, that I had to be the one responsible to fix it. You know, now I know from recovery, like, the only thing I can fix is me. And that's a great blessing. It took a long time to learn. I've been, like it said in the poem, I've been divorced twice. Both of those times is when I had huge downward spirals because I didn't know how to deal with it. My parents didn't show us how they were dealing with it. We were kind of flip-flop back and forth between households. They wanted to, like, share custody, which was a thing back then. You could actually, like, literally go for a couple days to one house and then the other house. So there was no, like, stability at all. But I still didn't know that wasn't okay until later. You know, this is just how it was. You know, and I don't have this tragic history of, you know, child abuse and neglect and all this stuff. But what those things led to is me getting myself into situations as an adult where I was abused, where I was neglected, where I was neglecting myself and where I didn't even know how to, like, wipe my own ass because I was so sheltered as a kid. I didn't know what the fuck to do. You know, when I moved in with my first husband, he's like, you're not a good housekeeper, you're not a good mom, you know, all those, you know, derogatory things. But it was really true because I didn't know how to do it. No one had ever showed me, you know, and I was just doing the best I could, and I was still trying not to rock the boat. I still wanted everything to be okay, you know, but I didn't even know, and this is going to sound stupid, I didn't even know, like, clean underneath the bath mat in the bathtub. Like, I just didn't know, right? It was something that I just didn't think about because no one ever told me, and I'd never had to do it before. You know, the first time I ever cooked him anything, I burned a can of soup. Like, I burned the soup from the can. That's because I never had to do it for myself. And if you're never taught how to do stuff for yourself, then how can you know? I'm a great cook now. I cook bomb shit. Like, I cook, you know, all the things. I cook all the things, you know. But I know it's okay to have something that doesn't come out right because I'm not worried about that anymore where it has to be perfect all the time and where I have to just, like, please everyone. Like, I don't have to make dinner for 7 people and make them eat something separate. I can make it for what I want to cook, and if you like it, fine. If you don't, move along. You know what I'm saying? I also want to talk a little bit about that black and white thinking that I have as an addict. When I was little, I did bond more with my dad because my mom was busy at school and then she was with my sister. And I gave him all the credit for everything. Anything good that happened in my life was because of my dad. And anything bad that happened, like the divorce or anything else, was definitely my mom's fault. And I really did believe that for a long time. And I never gave her credit for any of the good things she did. Any birthday she ever did for me, all the time she took me to school, tucking me in, rubbing my back, the things that she did do, she got zero credit for. I just didn't know that she did it. I really, like, there was some kind of block there where, like, he did all the good things. When I needed attention, he was there for me, and she wasn't. And so I've really had to work on that relationship the most. It talks about in the reading from this for this workshop, you know, mending those relationships. And I'm going to give my mom a lot of credit. She was very narcissistic when I was growing up. Everything reflected on her, and how it reflected on her was the most important thing. And that's another one of those things where, like, you know, you have to be good. You have to be doing the right thing. And if you're not doing the right thing, it's bad on her, right? And so I still had to, like, please everyone. She has done a butt ton of work on herself. But I've done a butt ton of work on myself, too. And I had to go, when it was time to make amends with my mom, I had to really sit down, have a conversation with her. And she apologized for some things, too, that I didn't even know she realized she had done. you know, or said. But the main thing I did was I just started calling her or texting her when I thought of her. That's it. That was the big aha moment that fixed our whole relationship, you know. And sometimes those little things, reaching out and letting someone know that you're thinking about them, can be a huge, big deal in mending a relationship. So I really wanted to touch on that. And so I went through a really big phase of learning and seeking reality when I decided to take off my rose-colored glasses, because I still want to be Vanessa, and Vanessa is a shiny, happy people. I like being positive. I like seeing the good in people. I enjoy that about myself. It's something I didn't want to lose, but I also needed to build boundaries, and I also needed to learn what was real and what was not real. I think a lot of times I just took for granted all the things I had growing up, and I never looked at anything that could have damaged me. And there were things that did damage me. But I had to move forward from where reality was at that point. So after I got into recovery, after my, I'll call it my active addiction, because I definitely used drugs before that, but my hardcore active addiction period, when I got into recovery, I had to, when I was working the steps, really look at, like, what is real and what is not real. And, you know, my sponsor and I both have something on our steps that's similar, and that is Disney. You know, that fantasy that everything, we don't ever see what happens later, right? We just see the ending where everything works out. And that's not always true. And I didn't believe that. I thought everything will always work out. You know, sometimes stuff isn't meant to work out. And that is a big lesson to learn. For me especially, you know, like, oh, this isn't working. I need to let it go. I don't need to keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. One of the things I always share is that, like, if I am struggling against the grain, if I am pushing upstream trying to get something I want, and I am wheeling and dealing and trying to figure out how I can make it work, that is not for me. I should not have that, whatever it is. It could be a person, place, thing, idea, whatever. But if I can make simple plans and move in that direction, and it comes easily, and the next step is presented to me, then that's probably for me. The last thing I really wanted to talk about is my son. I had my son, I got pregnant in high school, and I had my son when I was 17, and I took really good care of him for about 5 or 6 years. And then I gave him away to my husband, my then husband, right after our divorce. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how to support myself, much less anybody else. And I didn't want to bring people into his life that weren't healthy. And that's the only thing I knew to do. And he was still in my life, and I would still see him on the weekends and do the other parent thing where I had him during the summer. And then when I really got into my active addiction, I didn't talk to him at all for about 3 or 4 years. And I just started doing that simple communication like I did with my mom. I just started, like, hey, I'm here. When you're ready, I'm available. That's it. I'm so sorry. Let me tell you all of my woe. No, I'm sorry. When you're ready to talk, I'm available. And I was just consistent. And I just sent him that message all the time, you know. And eventually he reached out. Eventually he was like, okay, we can have lunch. You know, eventually I got to spend Mother's Day with him. Eventually I got to do all those great things that I've always wanted to do. And I still don't see him as much as I'd like, but he's 26. And so, you know, that's just how it is. But the most heartbreaking thing he ever said to me was, you know, why did you abandon me? And then he said, twice. And I was like, what? I had no idea what he's talking about, because I just thought about the time when I was sick and when I was in my addiction, and no, I didn't imagine the part where I gave him to his dad was abandonment, but it was, you know, and that's that rose-colored glasses. I thought, oh, I'm doing everything I can for him. He's going to be better off, you know, and I just saw, it was hard for me, and I know it was hard for him, but I just saw that that was the best option, and I saw it as a positive thing, and he didn't, you know, and we still got a lot of work to do between us, but if I can make amends with my mom, I can definitely make amends with my son. I don't have a whole lot more to say, actually. But I would just say the black and white thinking can kill me, right? If I put all of the all the guilt, shame, and remorse on one end, and all the happy, good juju, fun, whatever on the other end, I'm going to pick that end every time. And that end leads me to use, because I'm trying to cover up all of the emotions that feel bad and everything that feels bad and isn't fun and I don't want to do can be covered up with drugs. So I have to view it without the rose-colored glasses, and I have to view it realistically with healthy boundaries and all that crap that's not fun to do. That's all I got.
I'm David Amanetti.
Amen.
Thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and then I always start out with the four fruit of the lake. Look, I got to stand up.
If it's all right. Come on, man. Come on.
I always start out with the topic, you know, the four fruit of the labor of love lives in the harvest. And that always comes in its right season.
Yeah.
See, every tub sits on its own bottom and every flower blooms in its own season. See, I don't see it till I see it, and I don't hear it till I hear it, and I don't come to believe until I come to believe. Look, the text said that we are recovering from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And when I say seemingly, it's when the situation looks one way, but it's really another. See, all my life, things looked at one way. I'm talking about a colored glass, right? I never read this in my life, right? And when I first, when they first called and they asked me, you know, and again, my ego, I need to get my ego out the way again, because they called and asked me, and they said, well, somebody didn't show up. And they said, can you come? I said, ain't no motherfucking substitute, right? You didn't ask me at first. Because somebody didn't show up, right? And, but you know, it's always an honor and a privilege for a dope fiend like me to be asked to speak at any place at any time. Because it ain't always been this way. Because there was a time in my life, man, didn't nobody want to hear nothing I have to say. It was a time in my life, man, they didn't tell me to keep coming back. Man, it was a time in my life, man, people didn't already told me, David, don't, Peanut, don't bring your ass back over here no more. I'm going to call the police. Y'all, it's only places like this and people like y'all that I'm able to come down here, man. Because my really, my heart is really hard, right? It's really open, right? Because a whole bunch of stuff happened. I'm going to get this out the way real quick. You know, sometimes I don't know if it's God's will or the disease, right? Because us, when we were supposed to come down here, my car broke down. And I told my wife, I said, babe, I think I'm depressed. I might need to go to the doctor and, you know, get some depressed medicine. She said, ain't nothing wrong with you. That old rag-ass car just broke, right? You don't need no damn medicine. I said, you be careful how you talk the best. So I was saying, is this God's will for me not to come, or is that the disease? Because disease or isolation is his goal, right? And the disease will want to keep me bound, right? So I prayed about it, talked to my sponsor. He said, man, that disease trying to bind you up. You got another car. You got ways and means to get down there. You told them people, yes, you need to come. There is never only one set of feelings about our family. There is time when we see our childhood only through a rose-colored glasses. You know, it's funny how, you know, because I didn't see my childhood like that. You know, it's funny they say, man, we were a mismanager and people that normally don't mix, and we were just thrust together, and I was hearing her story, and mine is the opposite as a childhood, right? Yeah. Look, man, because I grow up, when I was coming up, I used to pee in the bed. And they used to laugh at me. Kids is cruel, right? Mm-hmm. And they used to laugh at me, and they used to call me pee-pee boy. So we stayed with Mud Deer. We stayed in LaGrange, right? In a little country town, and all of us stayed in one house. And we put a pallet on the floor, and I used to pee in the bed, right? And they used to laugh at me. They used to call me pee-pee boy. And Mud Deer used to have me sleep over there by myself so I won't pee on nobody. And at night, man, when everybody else eat watermelon, they wouldn't let me eat watermelon. They said, if you eat watermelon, you're going to pee in the bed. So in all of that said, y'all, and I could have used a drink way before I took me a shot of dope. And they laughed at me. Y'all, and I had a speaking impairment going on. I used to study real bad. I still study now, right? And that's one of my fears. You know, I remember in class, and the teacher asked me to read, get up and read, and I got up. And I studied real bad. and I had to take speech, and the kids, they laughed at me. They made fun of me. And I was little, y'all, and I was skinny, and I couldn't fight. And they used to, the kids in the neighborhood, y'all, they used to bully me. They used to take my now later. And they bullied me, right? So y'all, and as a direct result of that, and I really believe, y'all, that a part of my childhood had a lot to do with how I am tonight, right? Because in the beginning, using was fun, and then it becoming a habit, and then it was necessary. Right? Because our story is basically the same. It was real good at the beginning, real bad at the end. Yeah. You know, somebody new in here, y'all, I already know your story. Right. I already know your story, right? Because all our story is basically the same. Look, so y'all, as I was coming up, I really believed that I was destined to do some dope. Now, fast forward, y'all, and it's still, y'all, and I was up in the room praying today, y'all, because I studied real bad. I still study a lot, but it's something about when I get behind the podium, I don't study. Come on. Yeah. It is something, I don't know whether I study at home, and I'd be talking, she says, one time I was studying real bad, she just slammed the door in my face, right? I don't hear that study shit. But it's something about me being up here. Y'all, I was up in there praying a while ago, and I don't study, right? So I feel good. I done prayed up, y'all, and I understand today, y'all, because my belief system, and it was something about how I believe things, right? How my perception of things, right? Because I told you about we recovering from a seemingly, that's what I'm recovering from, a hopeless state of mind and body. When a situation looks one way, but it's really another. I used to believe in superstition. If a black cat crossed my trail, if I don't turn around, I'm going to have bad luck. If you walk on the ladder, you're going to have bad luck. Please don't break no mirror. That's 7 years. If somebody sweep you with a broom, if you don't spit on the broom, you'll go to jail. And I remember one day my dear was sweeping, and she swept me with the broom. I said, my dear, let me spit on that broom, because if I don't, I'm going to go to jail. She said, Peanut, if you stop stealing, you'll stop going to jail. We recovered from a scene, because situations look one way, but it's really another, right? Because by the time I made it to the room, the knockouts and on, the text said by the time we made it to our first meet, we had lost touch with our emotion. Mm-hmm. By the time I made it to this camp, y'all, I'm talking about I did dope, I fought. The literature said we fought and lost the whole battle. By the time I made it to this camp, y'all, I was spiritually refreshed. Look, I was spiritually bankrupt. So I came up in here, y'all, didn't know what to expect. All I know, I wanted to stop doing dope and stay out the penitentiary. Mm. That's all I wanted. So my childhood, y'all, and it was something, I'm going to get to that in a minute, but in my childhood, I'm going to get it right now. Mm-hmm. Instead of Bruce, mm-hmm. take many forms in mm-hmm. all of his history. Oh, here it is. The memory haunt us. Our history leave us with issues that comes up again and again. Or undeal with issues, have babies. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I can remember using when I really didn't want to use. Yeah. I still can remember some of these history that have babies, right? Because our family can still be hard to get along with. Right? My family can still be hard to get along with. Y'all, and I remember y'all coming up in the room with the Narcotics Anonymous, y'all, and I really didn't know what to expect. I really didn't believe it. It's a spooky shit go on in Narcotics Anonymous. It was too spooky for me to grasp. You have to surrender to win. You have to die to live. The only way you can keep what you have is by giving it away. That didn't make no goddamn sense to me. It really didn't, right? And I sure didn't believe I'm getting no sponsor. Right? I didn't believe in no step. They said, take the step. I looked at the step, and I said, man, 12 sinners can't help me. Man, I shot dope for a living. I really didn't believe 12 sinners would have no dope fiend. Man, because everything I tried, it failed. They beat me up. They locked me up. They shot me up. I went to school. Look, I went to penitentiary, right? Everything I tried, I went to the penitentiary. I picked up the Quran, and I prayed to these. And everything I tried failed. So I showed them, believe that would help me. And y'all talking about getting a sponsor. Man, I've been to the penitentiary 4 times. Y'all talking about getting a sponsor. And I didn't believe in getting no man telling no man my business, right? Because I couldn't go to my fellow inmate. I couldn't go to y'all and say that I'm having feelings today. I couldn't go to my fellow inmate and say I'm feeling vulnerable today. Man, I'm tall and skinny. Them dudes was after my ass down there. I couldn't tell nobody that. But thank God for desperation. Said the text said when we become beaten, we become willing. Say, man, when I came, you look, it's some funny thing. The text said through sheer desperation, we find help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah. You know, you got to be desperate as hell to come ask the dope fiend for some help. It was a desperation moment, and I came up in here, and some things started changing in my life. I used when I didn't want to use. I used every third of the month, y'all. I get a check every third of the month. And every time I get my check, and in spite of what I told myself, I'm not going to use when I get my check. And every time I get my check, the obsession and the compulsion will always control my life. Because when I say I ain't going to use, I cash my check, and my stomach will turn, and I experience powerless. I use when I really didn't want to use. And as I put that first in my body, the compulsion kick in, and I tell myself the old lie that I ain't going to spend but $20 this time, and I spend all my money, and I just peep out the window. And it wasn't until I came to Narcotics Anonymous, y'all, and I came up in here, and something happened in my life. Something happened. My sponsor told me to keep praying and keep coming to the meeting. Y'all, I prayed, and I kept coming to the meeting. I prayed, and I kept coming to the meeting. And the third of the month come around, and I cashed my check, and my stomach didn't turn. All right. Something happened in step two, and it works high and wide. It said, who can logically explain the sudden lift of the obsession to you? Who can logically explain? There's some spooky shit go on around here. We can't even explain that. Who can logically explain that, right? Or dope fiend that live to use and use to live. So, y'all, I got with that, and my stomach didn't turn, and I got with step two, and I did step three, and then when I got to step four, now we're going to talk about this childhood, because now I had to go back. The baggage that we had traveled with, the baggage that had traveled with us the longest is the stuff most likely that brings us feelings of hopelessness. That bag that I traveled with the longest. See, that's a whole bunch. Because there was some undeal with this, because it says right here, there are issues we must address immediately. It's some things that I must address immediately, right? Because them the things, I really believe this. Man, I shot dope for many days about me peeing in a bed. Right. I shot dope for many days about how my childhood, how we raised him. I never met my father. All right. If he walked through this door right now, I wouldn't know him. Yeah. And I had an opportunity in my childhood. I mean, my family's in Lubbock. And he in Lubbock, and we was going down there. They had a convention down there. And my auntie got in touch with me, and I was angry, and they were saying, well, your daddy, he's sick, and he wanted to see you. I ain't never seen this man a day before in my life. And we was on our way to Lubbock anyway. They had a convention, Texas State Convention. That's what it was. Me and my wife went down there. And I had the opportunity to see this man, and I didn't do it. They regret that he died. When I heard the history, see, it's hard. See, man, when you listening to people, you know, my auntie there was telling me about you talking about the family. My auntie was telling me about the history, right? With my dad and my mama and how he mistreated her and everything, you know, and I was hearing all this, and I said, man, fuck him. Motherfucker, he didn't try to catch up with me when I needed him, when kids was bullying me, when we had to be on food stamp, when we didn't have nothing to eat, when mama was working two jobs to take care of us. Fuck him. Now he's sick, and now he want me to say, I ain't going to see him. And he died They told me that he died. Like I said, I wouldn't know that man if he walked through this door. I never met him. I didn't have, and it's, I hate to say, I didn't really have no lot of feelings about that. Yeah. Yeah. It's my daddy, but I ain't had no, I'm just being honest, I didn't have no feelings behind that. Mm-hmm. And I hate that because I see other people have feelings about that. Yeah. Then I ask myself, man, is something wrong with you? Mm-hmm. I didn't get a chance to see him. But then I still have some family members down there, on some sisters and brothers on my other side that I still ain't never met. They'll call me from time to time. And we tell me some childhood. For understanding I'm getting, what my auntie was saying again, I'm just going by second part. They live like a goddamn king over there. We struggling over here. That jealousy kicked in. I talked to my sponsor about it. He said, man, that might be a form of jealousy that you have. Come on, that they live one way and we have to raise up another way. And then y'all bagging it up, y'all, and to fill it up, y'all, and I still had some resentment. Now watch this. Now, I'm here in Narcotics Anonymous. In my childhood, now, me and my cousin and sister, them, and a lot of us was raised in the same house by the same mama, the same ordeal. They go to college, and I go to the penitentiary. The disease was present inside of me long before I first used. It was inside of me long before I used. Man, thank God for Narcotics Anonymous, man, for people like y'all in places like this. I'm going to speed it up. Because I love this program. I love my life. We find that when we lose self-obsession, we know what it means to be happy, joyous, and free. Indescribable joy comes from sharing from the heart. No longer need to lie to gain acceptance. Narcotics Anonymous offer addicts a program of recovery. This is more than just a life without the use of drugs. Not only this way of life better than the hell we live, it's better than any life we have ever known. Any life I have known. It said when I lose, because I didn't lose self-obsession, we know what it means to be happy. Y'all, is y'all happy?
Yes.
Well, if you're happy and you know, clap your hands. So, if you're really happy, stomp your feet. The text said it works high and wide, right? And the literature said we come to be satisfied with our life. Man, I'm a well-satisfied customer. Man, I love the life I'm living. I'm living the life I love. Kay, you say you were spiritually refreshed and glad to be alive. Man, I love Narcotics Anonymous. It rejuvenates my will to live. Not only this way of life better than hell we live, it's better than any life I have ever known. Man, I done made it to Houston, Texas. It was a time in my life. It was a time in David Bill's life. Man, I couldn't leave the neighborhood. It was a time in my life. There's nowhere in the hell I could come to Houston. Man, I had to stay in dope range. I made it up in here. Man, my life had come together. You know, I'm going to tell you a story before I close with this. It was a man. He took his son to work with him. And his son was getting on his nerve. And he said, son, you're getting on my nerve. And he had a world map. And he tore it up in little old bitty pieces. And he said, son, put this map back together. He know that boy wasn't going to put the map together. And he went on back to work. And 12 minutes later, the little boy come back and said, daddy, I'm finished with this map. And the man looked at the map. He said, son, how did you know about the world, how to put this map together? He said, daddy, I don't know nothing about the world, but on the back of the map, it was a man. And I taped the man together. Mm-hmm. When I taped the man together, the whole world came together. When I got me together, the whole world came together. Look, y'all, my mind is open and my spirit is free. I make peace with myself and friends with the truth. Y'all, there's three things I must change if I'm going to stick around the room of Narcotics Anonymous. It's my feelings, my thoughts, and my behavior. Because if I keep my feelings, my thoughts, and my behavior, because every thought is not the truth and every feeling is not a fact. And if you think a feeling is a fact, get on this building and jump off and don't feel like falling. my feelings, my thoughts, and my behavior. Because if I keep on feeling like I always felt, I'm going to keep on thinking like I always thought. If I keep on thinking like I always thought, I'm going to keep on doing what I always done. If I keep on doing what I always done, I'm going to keep on getting what I always got. A whole bunch of pain. Because page 15 in the basic text, it says we face three disturbing realizations. And they disturbing. That one, that we're powerless over our addiction, that our life has become unmanageable. That means I can't use successfully. And two, I'm not responsible for my disease, but I am responsible for my recovery. I don't know if I was born an addict or not, but I know the first time I used an addict was born. And three, I must stop blaming people, places, and things for my situation. Because through my inability to accept personal responsibility, I actually create my own problem. And to identify and accept that I'm the problem, there is no solution. Y'all, you're sitting up in here and you're newer than me. The message is hope and the promise is freedom. The message that an addict
in the attic.
To stop using drugs,
lose the desire to use, and find